Blog Talk Radio.
For Friday, June 30th, 2017, you're listening to the Friday, Primetime Friday edition of the PW Torch Livecast. I'm Torch contributor Rich Fan. Bruce Mitchell is on assignment. Now, before we get started, to make sure editor-publisher Wade Keller does not fire me into the sun, I want to make sure we say this is the Primetime Friday Livecast, and I also want to congratulate him on his recent membership to the PW podcast family by way of his new upcoming Podcast One 4-day-a-week program. For those of you who haven't been on the site, Wade is going to be contributing to Podcast One 4 times a week, essentially giving his knowledge as he does for those of you who are VIP members. And on Fridays, up against us, which I'm sure Bruce is going to love, he's going to drop a weekly interview. So that means here at the Primetime Friday livecast, we're going to have to step our game up, and that starts tonight. And that means we're going to talk about 4 events in the next hour that I hope you guys are going to like. First of all, we're going to talk about the week that was. We're going to talk about the New Japan G1 specials coming up. For those of you who aren't of weak stomach, we might talk Slammiversary, and we're definitely going to talk a little bit about the most recent podcast with Bayley and Baron Corbin, B&B, as I'll call them for this evening. And that starts by you guys calling in. Obviously, if you're listening to us online, you can continue doing so. But if you want to join the chat, feel free to dial in 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And remember, once you have called in, if the spirit moves you and you'd like to chat with me, feel free to press 1 on that touch tone pad or spin 1 on the rotary if you are so inclined. Before I get to the callers, though, I do want to talk a little bit about Impact Wrestling, Global Force Wrestling, and Jeff Jarrett's march to, I don't know, hucksterism, holding people up. I can't call it. Right now, Jeff Jarrett is gone from wrestler to member with points into Impact Wrestling to now the conciliary of Global Force Wrestling's Impact Wrestling. I don't know what's happened, but apparently, if the rumors online are to be true, Mr. Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling was absorbed by Impact. And then later, at some point, the powers that be that at Anthem have decided that GFW is going to be for them as far as the primary trademarking and licensure and imaging and all that good stuff, because apparently who doesn't want gold? So with that in mind, the only thing, to be honest, I care about this weekend with Impact and Slammiversary is the title for title match between Lashley and Alberto El Patron, mainly because Alberto and Lashley are putting it through the media that they want to have one of the best matches this year. And I think they're both talented guys, and I think they can pull it off if they're given the time and the opportunity. But that's what I think. I want to hear what you guys think as well. And one last thing I do want to cover before we hop into the calls is the latest entrance into the Mae Young Classic, particularly one of my favorite female wrestlers, Kairi Hojo, now known as Kairi Sane, Sane, Insane in Membrane, don't know. But I'm looking forward to seeing her in the tournament, and I'm looking forward to seeing her drop the elbow until such time she can no longer drop it. And I will get here. But that's enough about me. I'm going to start right off the bat because we got to start hot. We got to keep our game up with editor-publisher Wade Keller going to Podcast One and dropping some of his knowledge there. We have to hold serve. So 478, the illustrious Durrell from Georgia, what – do you have on your mind this Friday on the live cast?
Not too much. Rich, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. I just got off a plane about an hour and change ago from my day job. I had a conference I had to go to in Orlando. So apologies if I'm a little stuffed up or if I'm a little jet laggy. I'm trying to kind of keep my brain active while we work this through.
I understand that. Well, get right to the questions. I got three for you. My first question would be, after talking smack and about and what Daniel Bryan did and said and how he lost a little credibility, how do you feel about that, and shouldn't WWE help protect especially babyface GMs when it comes to stuff like that?
Okay, you're going to have to elaborate because I didn't get a chance to watch Talking Smack this week yet because I was out with work.
When he came out, you know, he banned Ellsworth, and then Carmella ended up winning, and then he basically said she won fair and square with no help at all, even though he laughed off that James Ellsworth didn't stay banned from outside and said they just need better security or somebody need to point them out when he come back in.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb. I agree completely with you on that issue. I think there has to be a level of professionalism. If you're going to be the face GM, you can't laugh off, especially a week removed from the furor that rose over Ellsworth grabbing the title for Carmella. So, yeah, I'm completely with you. I don't think that was a good idea, nor do I think he should have been as – from what you're saying, he should have been as eager to lean into that story as he sounds like he was.
Okay. Now, my second question is about New Japan and, you know, what's going on this weekend with them. Who do you have as the winner in Okada versus Cody? And how do you feel about – what kind of match do you feel Cody needs to be looked at as a main event player after this match against Okada, which everybody seems to have a good match against Okada?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, I think Cody just needs – to have what he's done so far in the independent scene and step it up, I would say 25%. I don't think it needs to be a six-star, as Dave Meltzer has put the two matches between Okada and Omega, but I also don't think it should be the paint-by-the-numbers WWE main event style. I think Cody is in a very good position to prove everything to this point he's argued for can happen. And what I mean by that is, I don't care as much about the star rating or the level of moveset that he brings. What I care about is going forward, because I do think he'll win the title this weekend. I think if he is double champion in the role of being a heel in the United States – well, I'm sorry, a heel in Japan and a face in the United States, he said some very lofty things. I don't know if you listened to Wade's special audio where he put up Cody's interview – but he cares about stuff like old school wrestlers would, where he's very involved and very focused on how much was the gate, how many people they would bring in. I want to be a part of a 10,000 seat show with Ring of Honor. And, you know, he even went out as far as to say, tongue in cheek, he would love if Daniel Bryan did come free, to kind of tie in your first question. If he did come free, he would love to wrestle him and have that contribute to a 10,000 seat show for Ring of Honor. And so I think for New Japan, if Cody can do the same thing, if he can be as engaging, if he can be essentially what happened with AJ Styles. I talked with Bruce and I argued with Travis on the East Coast cast about it. A lot of people don't remember that a scant 3 years ago, AJ came in on his first match and won the IWGP heavyweight title with interference from Yujiro, AKA the Tokyo Pimp now. And no one batted an eye, even though he had the, you know, pardon my French, but he had the stink of TNA on him when he came to New Japan. So if Gato was that, if he was that risk willing in terms of going with AJ. I don't see how you can't be as willing to do so with a guy who already has a name that is well known in Japan, because Japanese fans remember Cody's dad and they remember the Rhodes name and they respect him for it. And the American Nightmare is something I think that's a work in progress, as he mentioned. And that was a lot for one question, so I apologize for the wordiness.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I understand. And wasn't AJ when he won that? That was like right after the first of the year show, right?
Correct.
Okay. I was thinking that Cody wasn't gonna win since they didn't have him in the G1 this year, and don't usually the champion is in the G1, so they can set up. If you take a loss, they can set up different matchups until they get to the biggest show of the year.
Absolutely, and I think that goes back to the risk-taking part I mentioned. I think if he did win on Saturday night, that would actually make it even more of a slap in the face for some of the fans, for someone of all people, you know, one of the loud Americans to not only have the IWGP title, but to not participate in the G1 climax and instead decide to either defend or quote unquote, take it easy in the United States while the hard Japanese guys have to, and you know, the gaijin that actually respect the strong style have to toil in the G1. So that would be a lovely story to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that, but because I know people say that they don't want to see Ring of Honor, the champion, take that loss. But I don't think nothing wrong with you going all out, and it's an all-out battle, and then you just happen to get your number at the last second. Don't diminish you as a champion or not. And I was thinking maybe, because that would go into my next question, because isn't Omega in the tournament for the U.S. title?
Yes. He opens up against Michael Elgin, in fact.
Okay. Now, my second question would be, if Omega wins that title and Okada keeps his, do you think they will be setting up, and both of them are in the G1, do you think they'll be setting up for a champion versus champion at the biggest show to cap it off?
They could.
Set up for the third and blow-off match?
But no, it'd be the fourth. Because their match will be during the G1, it's a 30-minute match, and you can't have a title on their line during it. I say can't as if there's this magical
two different
tablet.
Blocks.
No, they're in the same block. Right now, they're scheduled to be the final – I think they're in the B block together. The final B block match before the actual final of the winner of block A versus the winner of block B is Okada Omega 3.
Okay. Well, I was just saying
that
at three because it'll be for the title. So third time, and since you step up even more for a title than you would, in my eyes, for just a regular singles match. But those are my three questions. That's what I wonder. You can go. I don't want to keep up all the time. So you can go to someone else. Thanks. Thank you, Rich.
No problem. Always a pleasure, D-Real. Keep it breezy. That was Darrell. And as always, he's welcome. And as always, you're welcome. Feel free to give us a call. Area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Before I get to the next caller, I'm going to take a bit of a, as Steve Austin would say, pause for the cause, to give you some knowledge about MMA Torch, our sister site, and how you can become a member.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
All right, we're back with Primetime Friday. I'm Rich Fan, Pro Wrestling Torch contributor, and I'm here with you while Mr. Mitchell, senior columnist, man about town, and rock and tour of all that is pro wrestling, is on assignment. I will be bringing my next caller on the air, but before I do, I want to take a moment to highlight the awesomeness that was Glow on Netflix. Last weekend, I did what most do when Netflix releases a new show, and I binge watched it. Since it's a half hour, it was an easy watch over the course of the weekend. And while there will be some people who go too far and try to critique the wrestling matches, in terms of getting the heart of pro wrestling, the heart of why it is such a great, I call it an art form, and I completely stand by that, but also it's a business. They showed both sides, and I thought the characters that were developed within were fun. And as I've read many articles since, the whole idea of the male gaze and having an entire set run by women allowed for the ladies to have an truly interactive and completely pure experience, where Marc Maron was the only male of note really on set day to day. So he was really the person in the opposite position. So kudos to Netflix. Kudos to everyone involved. Allison Brie. Kudos to Stan Bush. Anytime you can pull a Stan Bush training montage into a show, you will get my money. Well, you know, they already got my money because it's Netflix, but you guys know what I mean. But enough of my bloviating. Let's bring on our next call. 862. Please state your name and where you're calling from on the Primetime Friday Livecast.
It's Kylan Rich. How are you?
Kylan, my friend, I'm good. I'm good. How are you, my man?
I'm doing very well. Unfortunately, my cable company does not carry Access TV, so I'm very disappointed that I won't be able to join in on the fun and cover New Japan with everybody tomorrow, but nevertheless, my question, or first question for this week, as I called with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek months and months ago on their Impact post show, why do you suppose Ed Nordholm made the decision to change the official company name from Impact Wrestling to Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling?
I honestly think Jeff Jarrett is a remarkable salesman, and they feel like the well has been poisoned with Impact Wrestling's title, the TNA, et cetera, et cetera. And the further they get away from the Dixie Carter regime, the better. However, they're running headlong, in my humble opinion, into the arms of a man who was running, you know, empty baseball arena. Well, not empty, but baseball arena shows, selling Global Force Gold, and whose tag champs are currently the Goons for the WWE champion. It's a really messy, really just, I hope Impact does well, because I don't want people to get out of work. But as I've mentioned with Bruce numerous times, if that means Impact has to go away for another company to get a chance to thrive, that might be better for everyone in the long run.
I have to agree. My second question for this week, a little bit off the beaten path here. Now that we are halfway through 2017, who do you think are the most improved and least improved wrestlers of the year so far?
Kylan, let me see if it works. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, for some reason there was a hiccup on our end, and it looks like the technology is working. So, Ron, why don't you go ahead with your second question?
Now that we are halfway through 2017, who do you think are the most improved and least improved wrestlers of the year so far.
Okay. Well, I think in the case of most improved, I would give it to... I would say most improved for me has been Carmella, really. Her renaissance recently with Ellsworth. While she's always been, since she came up to the main roster, closer to the front of the pack for me in terms of her out-of-the-ring stuff, I think she's finally coming together and making herself a complete package. As far as least improved, I would most likely say... is going to be kind of piling on him. Roman Reigns, he's kind of where he's always been, and I'd hoped after WrestleMania he would have been in a position to kind of leapfrog into a new opportunity, but apparently, and obviously that hasn't been the case. What about yourself?
I know this is going to be a shock for some people, but after at least promo wise, after the past few weeks, I'm gonna go as one of my most improved. I'm gonna go Big Cass. I would also put Braun Strowman in my most improved list. And for least improved, I'm gonna go Enzo. And who else is in there for least improved? I'm going to go simply because they haven't been able to upgrade their characters yet. I'm gonna go the Hardys and agree with Bruce that it's time for them to go into a new phase.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I can see that. I mean, right now, they're going to have to figure it out. They're going to have to fish or cut bait when it comes to whether or not they have the legal access to the broken gimmick or if they're going to do something new entirely. But I definitely can see now. Enzo, what did you expect him to do going forward? Did you think in the breakup he would step his game up a little bit more? Because personally, I thought his promos the last 2 weeks have been pretty good.
Because this is only his second week, and we haven't seen him do anything in the ring yet on his own.
Okay, that's fair. I think that's absolutely fair. And what was your third question?
And my final question is, do you think Impact will go the typical route of having D'Angelo Williams win the special match on Sunday with him and Moose versus Eli Drake and why am I drawing a blank here? This is not supposed to happen.
Oh, it's okay. It was Moose and Eli Drake. Let's see. I had that in my notes here. Nope, I can't find it. It's all right. I think that D'Angelo Williams, if they want to get the quote unquote headlines, absolutely, he should get the fall. And really, to be honest, the biggest thing I take away from that tag match is I care more about D'Angelo Williams in it right now than Moose. And I'm really sad that one of the guys 2 years ago who was one of the preeminent independent wrestlers has kind of come into a little bit of a doldrum being in Impact Wrestling.
Yeah. I think that's more so the structure of Impact more than Moose himself. The structure of Impact really isn't conducive for a great degree of talent to get over the way they should.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the bigger things he ran into the issue of was, from what was reported at the time, the WWE kind of cooled off because they had been dealing with issues in terms of domestic violence, law enforcement, things like that. And they didn't want to deal with the potential backlash of having a man like Quin Ojinaka, who had been in trouble in the past for domestic violence. But then when you look at the WWE since Moose has signed, when you have things as offensive as how much people had to backpedal for, say, what happened with LaMelo Ball, really? Are you really going to sacrifice this guy? Because you could have worked around it, and by this point, you would have been through the furor of the issue. But, you know, that's just me. Thank you for that, Kylan. I hope you have a wonderful weekend and enjoy your 4th of July.
You too, Rich.
All right. That was my buddy, Kylan. Always good to chat with him. And before we continue, I'm going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss a little bit about the Baron Corbin Talk is Jericho interview and what I think it means for him going forward.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
As you heard the dulcet tones of editor-publisher Wade Keller, I want to remind you that in addition to the PW Torch Livecast episode you're listening to right now live, if you have a Pro Wrestling Torch VIP subscription, you also get ad-free versions of this. In addition to quality articles, a treasure trove of almost 30 years of investigative reporting, interviews, and quality journalism from Wade, Bruce Mitchell, Mark Madden, Sean Radican, Pat McNeil, The Fix with Todd Martin on audio, my partner in crime on Wednesdays, audio-wise, that'd be Travis Bryant. I almost forgot Travis's name for a second. It's okay. We'll deal with it. And that's all for $10 a month, guys. For $10 a month, you get access to this stuff ad-free, wonderful archive knowledge, and, of course, the fun world of PW Podcast, where you can go on and save your ears the work, because Wade's collected a cadre of volunteers to collect, collate, and drop for you all the news that's fit to read about the wrestling podcasts that have littered the internet. So definitely consider not only listening to the PW Torch Livecast archives, but also joining the PW Torch VIP family. And don't just think I'm saying this to be a pretty face. Not only am I a contributor, but I am a member. So with that in mind, let's get to the tail end, the second half, if I could borrow the football term, of the PW Torch Livecast Primetime Friday edition. 615, you are on the air. Why don't you state your name, where you're calling from?
Hey, Rich, this is Kenny O'Sell from Gallatin, Tennessee. Can you hear me all right?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to make it quick. I know that you and Colin were just talking about Jeff Jarrett and Impact Wrestling, and, of course, I am from Tennessee, and I'm very familiar with Hulk Hogan and his father and what I would like to refer to more as the dog and pony act, because in Memphis, they would used to pull off a lot of stuff as far as not paying wrestlers, you know, a lot of money and stuff. And so I am definitely very familiar with Jeff Jarrett and his background and his whole family background, and especially now. And in fact, I even read a friend of mine sent me some links from Cage Side Seats that they are officially, Impact is pretty much no more, and that it's now officially GFW, Global Force Wrestling. And Jeff Jarrett kind of made himself like a chief or COO, almost like in vain of Jeff Jarrett. It's almost like he's copying WWE. And I guess that's really my question is, do you see them now literally turning the new GFW into basically WWE Lite? And if so, is that really the right direction for them to go? Because in a lot of ways, they have been WWE Lite for the last 15 years. And I can just tell you personally, I don't think that's really a good move for them. They need to find something that's unique. And one of the things I think that makes them unique, if they do a good job with videos in the UFC sense of, you know, telling stories and backgrounds of their wrestlers, that's the direction that they really need to go. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I do. I think they do a fantastic job of introspective, retrospective of their wrestlers. And I also think that if they're going to have Jeff Jarrett at the helm, I need to see new ideas. Because right now, they're doing, on a week-to-week basis, if you listen to Socheck and McMahon, they're doing a pretty good job. I personally would rather listen to those two fine gentlemen talk with callers about the show than even bother watching the show. And that's not necessarily because I don't like the wrestlers that are on the show or anything like that, but I just think this is it's a negative environment. And I don't want to hate watch Impact Wrestling because I don't think anything good will come of Jeff Jarrett's continued involvement in that company. And I know that's pretty harsh, but just like you were talking, I've seen this song and dance. I saw what he was doing with Global Force Gold and all these little side projects, and we're going to get it. We're going to get TV. We got a list of agreements. We're going to get there. And then nothing ever happened. So I'm hopeful that at some point this either leads to the big fall or they, you know, at this point you have to, you know, poop or get off the pot, for lack of a better word, because if they're going to keep going with this, it's just going to be 20 years of Impact and 25 years. And before we know it, it's going to be 30 years of a show that no one wants to watch. And it's being held together by people who think Jeff Jarrett knows how to fix it.
Yeah. And it's definitely proven that even when he had his first run as owner, and I watched most of the early years of the promotion, he just really didn't have anything as far as really creative on his own. He was so dependent then on Vince Russo. And it really just, in my opinion, it brought the promotion down to a very mediocre level. In many ways, I look at that promotion, if WCW was still alive, that is what the promotion is now. I mean, that's what it feels like to me every time I would watch Impact. Or, like you said, I listen to the podcast with Showtek and McMahon because they are really good at pointing out the things that are both good and bad. Because there are a lot of good and Impact as far, well, GFW now, as far as the talent goes. They just got to be able to book them right, and then they can kind of go from there. And more importantly, they're going to have to get a really good distribution deal or else it's just all going to fall apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I just saw online that there's an SI article that says the new era of Impact Wrestling begins under Jeff Jarrett at Slammiversary. And I'm looking at this lineup, and you're having in the semi-main event Scott Steiner and Josh Matthews versus Jeremy Borash and Joseph Park. Now, I know the twisting road that led to that match, but I'm like, come on. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's really bad. And, you know, really the whole card is just not – they really paid little attention to the card itself, and it's shown, like you said, with the semi-main event being what it is, and the fact they're going to bring back Mike Tenay and Don West for basically a cameo, which does take one question. If for some reason Josh Matthews lose, do you think they would keep Jeremy Borash in that role, or could they go after somebody, like let's say a Kevin Kelly or somebody in that thing, to possibly build some credibility? Because to me, if the announcer is it good, incredible? Like, let's say Lance Russell going back to Memphis. That plays a big role in selling the product. You have to have somebody that's credible enough, like a Michael Cole or Jim Ross, that can sell that product, or else it's just not going to matter.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the question I would throw back to you, though, is do you think any of those people, like a Kevin Kelly, if he's already willing to go to a part-time with Ring of Honor to stick with New Japan, is he going to be willing to add to his schedule for the sake of Impact Wrestling?
Well, I mean, I look at what Cody Reynolds has done, and I think it's definitely possible, especially if Jeff Jarrett does convince Anthem and say, hey, we need somebody that's a credible announcer. Jerry Voresh is not a guy, no offense, but we need somebody that has experience, that has the type of credentials needed, then yeah, I think it's possible. It's a matter of convincing Anthem to open up the pocketbook. It's similar to what Eric Bischoff did ultimately with Time Warner. They convinced them to eventually open up the pocketbook, and we saw the results. I mean, granted, they were short-lived, but it was successful. So yeah, I think it's possible, but they have to work together and come up with a solution. It's almost like, you know, we're seeing now with the free agency opening up on Saturday, it's kind of the same thing. You know, you have to bring in the agents and convince them that, hey, this feels better than what you're being offered.
Yeah. Now, and okay, so what would be, I'm going to play devil's advocate, what would be the attractant for Kevin Kelly to turn down New Japan for the sake of Impact Wrestling?
Well, for one thing, even though it is Pop TV, it is a much wider distribution than where he's at right now. I mean, no offense with New Japan World and him being just an English commentator and all, but I think that if he wants to get exposure, that's about as close as he's going to get outside of Ring of Honor and WWE in terms of getting exposure to say, hey, I'm a credible announcer and I want to sell you this product. Because in many ways, an announcer in wrestling, it's almost like a car salesman. You know, it's like a used car salesman that sells you a car. Even if it is a lemon, he still has a job to sell the product and sell how good it is and try to camouflage all the negatives surrounding it. And I think that that alone, if they can get a good distribution deal or re-up and get more money, that plays a big role in getting a guy like a Kevin Kelly is a good example of that.
True. And now here's the issue I see when it comes to the money. I'm already looking, and you know, you've heard numerous people, both the you have people on the East Coast cast, you have people on the live cast with Wade, you have Socek and McMahon talking about the TV contracts for the WWE and how if the ratings currently hold it where they're at, what does that landscape look like? Impact is doing almost 90% worse than them. And how much more money are they going to get if they aren't going to get above 387,000 viewers?
Yeah, that is kind of a good point there. And quite frankly, I think it's all going to come down to just, you know, can they get somebody out there that can be a big changer? And I'm not talking about just another ex-WWE superstar because they've done that now for 15 years. But maybe it's time to kind of change it up and get somebody that's has credential, whether it be an announcer, even another promoter to an extent, somebody that has that experience or creative writer to really kind of turn things around. But that's really all I have to say, Rich. I have to get back from my break. I'm kind of working the late shift tonight, and I hope you have a good 4th of July.
Oh, same to you, man. I hope you have a safe one for the rest of your day at work. Oh, man, that's Kenny from Galveston working hard, trying to do it all as a working man, if I could again steal another Steve Austinism. Now, I am happy to bring to you one of the longest reigning defending pre-W Torch VIP members, Mr. Brian Austin. Brian, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, Rich, how are you? I hope you have a really good weekend.
Excellent. Thank you. Same to you, sir, and happy 4th.
Happy 4th to you, and I'm glad you made it home safely.
Oh, thank you. So what's on your mind?
Hey, so I'll go ahead and get to it, and I called in a little bit earlier, and I was listening, and then I had to leave work, so I missed a lot of part of the show. Did you talk anything about the, I'm sure you did, though, about this is how it's been the week of the woman in WWE? But I do have a question, though.
No, I haven't yet. That with all the stuff going on this weekend, I haven't had a chance to talk about this three-day streak of spectacular women main events, so why don't you go ahead and take the floor?
Well, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, you can discuss it, but I have a question for you. And so my question is that the Mae Young Classic is going to happen this summer, which is, by the way, Rich, it's kind of unusual because they're taping, I believe it's July 13th and 14th, but they're actually going to start showing it, I believe, like August the 24th, I believe, is when they say they're going to be starting to be on demand. So I really don't like that it's such a long wait between the actual, you know, the first couple rounds and then, because, you know, spoilers are going to happen. I know spoilers is what it is, but such a long gap between them taping it and then actually showing it on the network.
Yeah, the weird thing about that is, from what I was reading, they're going to try, and I don't know about this idea, they're going to try to tape it and then just drop it for binge-watching purposes. And that makes no sense to me. So I'm with you. I mean, the timing of it just doesn't seem like it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, and so the tapings are both sold out. I went to NXT tickets and I saw both tapings, the 13th and the 14th, are sold out. And I know the final is going to be on a Tuesday. Don't quote me, like September 12th on right after SmackDown. It'll be live. The finals will be live in Las Vegas. And back in my mind, I'm kind of thinking about driving up there, you know, but I doubt I could do it, but you never know. But my question, though, going back to the Mae Young Classic, Rich, is that, so let's say if you, Rich, of course, could take one woman from Raw, one woman from SmackDown, and one woman from NXT, and put them in the Mae Young Classic, with being that they cannot be a current champion, so you throw out Alexa Bliss, you throw out Naomi, you throw out Asuka, can you name a woman that's on Raw, SmackDown, and NXT that you would have in the Mae Young Classic?
Oh, wow. Okay, so one Raw, one SmackDown, one NXT, and did I miss anything?
That's it, and they're not a current champion. So one of those not
okay, and not a current champion. I would say from Raw, especially given the field of women, I would add Nia Jax. From SmackDown, I would add Becky Lynch. And from NXT, I would add Ruby Riott.
Okay.
And my reasoning is Ruby's wrestled a lot of those women in Shimmer and some of the other promotions. Becky, again, more independent experience. So she would be of that group, I think, the safest that you could put into that tournament without worrying about anyone being injured. And then I mentioned Nia because even though she's one of the greenest women on the roster, I think her and the alpha female could have a brawl for the ages.
It's nice. So the first one I'm going to pick is that nobody's going to like this one as I say it. But for SmackDown, I'm going to say Tamina. And the reason why is maybe give her some more experience. And once you rationalize Ruby Riott, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to say Tamina because she's, you know, how long she's been wrestling and she's still, you know, you hate to say it's might have been wrestling for 5 or 6 years and they're still green. You hate to, you know, even vocalize that. But maybe mixing up with somebody else to give her some better experience.
No, that makes sense. So what about Raw?
Raw would be Mickie James. And the reason why I thought Mickie was kind of similar to the Brian Kendrick, that, you know, somebody with a grizzled veteran, you know, she's had a few setbacks since she's came back to the WWE. And then it's just like, hey, I want to, you know, I'm going to need to prove myself again. You know, I'm a veteran, but I need to show what I really have, and I want to do Mae Young Classic. And then for my NXT, and I tried to look this up before I left because I'm kicking myself, but I can't remember her name. But it's the she's been on TV once, maybe twice, but she's the one woman who has a really, really long ponytail. And she came to NXT when they were here in Phoenix. And again, I went to go look her name up, and I didn't have enough time before I left to call you. So I can't remember what her name is, but she has a super long ponytail, and she'll use it in matches, like, you know, like a clothesline or something like that.
Oh, geez. I'm looking now at the female roster real quick. Not Mandy Rose, right?
No. I mean, she's maybe, I don't think she's African-American necessarily, but she's pretty dark-skinned. And her really long black hair, and again, it's all into a ponytail. And of course, when you and I hang up, I'll try to look it up, and then I'll tweet it to you.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about, and she's already in the tournament.
Okay, well, there you go.
Her name is Bianca Blair.
That name sounds familiar.
If you look her up, she wrestled against, for those of you who listen to the East Coast cast, I address Aaliyah from NXT as Racist McTweet's face because she put up some very inappropriate tweets in her teenage years that were found
then.
Quite quickly. Was that?
She was young then. She was young then.
She was. But she had a match, and a Mae Young, I think it was last week, in fact, there was a Mae Young qualifier where Bianca beat Aaliyah to get in.
Okay. Then since that's going to happen, I'll just go with, I hate to say Nikki Cross, you know, default to that, unfortunately. But, I mean, not to default to it, because she put on a hell of a match on Wednesday. But I'll just say her. And so, Rich, that's all I have. I'll go ahead and let some other callers get on the line. And, again, I hope you have a real good weekend, and I will talk to you soon. I appreciate you, too, by the way, Rich. Thanks a lot for everything.
Oh, no problem. Enjoy your fourth, Brian. That is a long time. PW Torch VIP member Brian Austin. Great dude. Great wrestling fan, even better human being. Now, before we get into the home stretch and the final portion of our live cast, let's take another break and hear about the fun things you can do with Amazon through the Torch.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch live cast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Primetime Friday edition of the PW Torch Livecast. I'm Torch contributor Rich Fan, bringing you to the final stage of our delightful chat. And before I do our final call list for the evening, I do want to mention what I said after the prior break, and that's if you get a chance, you definitely should listen to Talk is Jericho or go to PW Podcast and read about Baron Corbin's interview with Chris Jericho. I think it was very illuminating. One, because he talks about how The Undertaker himself has been a mentor to him and has tried to guide him because he was a fellow big man. And two, the continued misadventures of the sophomoric boss that is Vince McMahon. Baron Corbin brings up a story in which he was coming through Gorilla and someone cross-checks him into the wall, and he gets really angry and turns around. And lo and behold, it's a 70-year-old CEO, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, joshing him. And, you know, later on, Corbin relates the story that he saw Vince on a phone with his back to him and just walked up to him and put his arm on his shoulder and said, you know, I could have gotten you back now, right? And Vince just chuckled and had a big old belly laugh about it. So why did I bring that up? Because Titus O'Neil's Titus brand better be something other than the thing that's holding serve until his contract runs out. That's why. And with that in mind, let's bring on our final caller for the evening. And I think this is the man from the other side of the world. Jason, is this you?
Yeah, that's me. Rich, how you going, mate?
Outstanding, man. Good morning.
Okay, thanks for that. Yeah, it's not the best weather over here at the moment, but we'll get through that. I shouldn't complain. You know, I saw a stat the other day that Perth, where I'm from, it's the sunniest capital city in the world. So I really can't complain, can I?
No, especially since I live in the rainiest city in the United States.
Is that right? Jeez. Hey,
yeah,
Rich, just remember,
when the Seahawks did the... Oh, go ahead, Jason.
Now, I just want to piggyback on the Baron Corbin interview, and I just want you to remember, right, that you're not as good as you think you are.
That I have to admit, that is, and they mentioned also the I'm so disappointed. Those are probably two of the biggest things. If anyone that's in a mentoring role, or like when I was younger, my parents would say to me, that would just cut me to my core. So I completely get the mind games that Vince can play with any of his wrestlers, because they'd work on me. So that's kind of scary.
Wouldn't you just love to see that quote in the Performance Center? Just remember, you're not as good as you think you are. Oh, okay, geez, thanks. Sort of like puts a damper on everything.
Well, you know, rumors have it that Wade tries to email Bruce with that right before he sends out the latest Bruce Mitchell audio show, but it still hasn't taken after 27 years.
that's a cook. Just imagine that in the subject line, and how Bruce would react to that. Like, he'd flip out, go, "Come on, man. I've been with you for 20-odd years. What are you doing to me?"
Oh, I'm sure Bruce would send he'd probably send an email with unfriendly photos attached involving fingers that should not be put on digital transmissions. But, you know, that's Bruce.
Man, I thought that was a very interesting interview. I mean, I like Baron Corbin in the sense that he plays a heel, and, you know, he doesn't make any excuses about it, and he wants to be disliked. He's not looking for those, you know, ironic cheers or those cool cheers. But, you know, I don't know about you, but it's sort of a catch-22 when I listen to these sort of quote-unquote insider interviews that are conducted by fellow wrestlers. It's like, for me, I don't have a problem if people like Wade or other people do it. But when I hear from other wrestlers, it's like a catch-22. I really like listening to them, but at the same time, it's almost like I hear too much and it takes me out of the moment. It's like I want them to put a limit on what I find out. But then again, I'm sort of addicted to it. So it's a catch-22 situation for me. Do you sort of feel the same way?
Absolutely. I could give you an example of one. Since I was on this flight, I listened to like 3 or 4 podcasts. I listened to Mike Bennett talking with Edge and Christian, and I was really grateful that they talked about his journey as a pro wrestler, but at no point did he get to what the reasoning or any of the backstory is behind his current gimmick in WWE.
And I like that. See, now it's a bit of a mystery to you. But
exactly.
Baron Corbin, I feel like I kind of know everything about the journey, and that he's been, you know, he's been told backstage how to do things. Just a little bit too much information. You know, I like it, but at the same time, you know, I wonder if back in the day, if I was listening to podcasts and I was hearing about Bret Hart and his journey and Stone Cold and whatnot, I have no issue with hearing about it now that their careers are over. But at the time, I feel like I might have taken a little bit of shine off them. So it's almost like we know too much. But then again, I do want to hear it, so I can't stop myself from listening, because when I saw that Jericho was interviewing Baron Corbin, I was like, okay, this is an interview I'd like to listen to.
And to be honest, here's the other thing, Jason. I want to get your opinion on this. I don't know if too many people would admit it, but I think the apex of the turning point for wrestling fans on Braun Strowman was after he interviewed. And I want to say, I couldn't remember if it was Austin or Jericho, but it was after that interview that people were like, wait, this guy's pretty cool.
Yes. No, you know, you're right. And that's the flip side to it, because that's exactly what I thought. Because my biggest fear with Braun Strowman is that I kind of feel sorry for sort of like the big men of this era, because I feel like because we've got such a critical eye watching the product, that a lot of people aren't going to give them a chance. And I want all the wrestlers to do well, but I want Braun Strowman to do well. And after I listened to him with Austin, I thought, yeah, this guy is a pretty cool guy. You know, I really want him to do well. And I think you're right. I think the fans, because I learned a little bit more about him and what he was, and he wasn't just some lumbering, illiterate type of person. You know, he had a bit of substance to him, and he was very relatable. I think fans wanted to give him that chance. So that's definitely the flip side to that argument.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's others. Like, I was reading on PW Podcast when I was waiting to be plain about Trevor Lee, one of Bruce's favorite wrestlers from his area. And I now have to not only listen to the podcast, but I want to see more of his matches outside of CWF, because this is a guy who's from the age of 17 to 21 was homeless and got into pro wrestling because his family had ties to the Hardys, but had a very traumatic experience early in his life where he caught his mom sleeping with a wrestler in their house and having to leave. And just that path and what happened afterward blew my mind in terms of just reading the summary. So I'm in the same boat. It's this gift and it's a curse. You want the information, but you also don't want it to paint a picture of the person outside of whatever it is. And I think it goes back to what Wade talks about with social media. If you notice, we haven't heard from Johnny Gargano. We have heard occasionally from Tommaso Ciampa, and it's only been Ciampa being a jerk. It hasn't been him talking about doing a Make-A-Wish in Biloxi or going to Edge's and Beth Phoenix's Headlock on Hunger event. So I think if they find that balance, it would help. But I don't know how many people are willing to ride that line because I'm sure it's exhausting. One of the things I took from Netflix when I was watching Glow was the stress a heel had to be under when you were playing an ethnic heel in the 80s. Because, sure, you hear, you know, the stories about guys being proud they got stabbed, but at some point that has to get to you, right? So I don't know what the balance even is with that. Do you want to go that far, or is there going to be a happy medium that we've yet to find?
That's a good point. I mean, we think about what it was like, yeah, back in the 80s. I mean, even, you know, Sergeant Slaughter, you know, in the early 90s, he feared for his life, you know, when he turned the Iraqi sympathizer and to be that foreign heel. I mean, it wouldn't be the same today because people would be saying, oh, you know, he's putting in a great performance. But you're right about finding that balancing act. I mean, this is why I'm a fan of Dean Ambrose, is because he's just simply not on social media. But the only time you get to hear anything from him really is through Renee Young. And that might be the odd picture here or there. But he's just not on social media. And that lends me to believe that what he's like on TV is sort of what he's like in real life. And even though, you know, he's done a couple of interviews here and there with Jericho, and he's sort of the same type of person, so it kind of makes me buy into his character even more.
Yeah, I agree. I think Dean does it right. But also Dean runs into the issue of, you know, go back to the Brock Lesnar, like some of the old school guys don't really see him as, I can make money off this guy. Like, Samoa Joe, apparently Brock likes, and he's been very, you know, positive. And you see Joe's on all the time. He's definitely a person that's an avid user of social media. So I think are you savvy using it? Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, Brian has been very, very fair in mentioning whenever I would have issues with Aaliyah that her issue in terms of writing the stuff she wrote on social media was because she was young and the ignorance of youth should be something we keep in mind. But with social media, the internet's forever, right? Right. But when you look at someone who's been super professional, like even Tyler Bate, the former WWE UK champion, he had to go private for a little bit because people found some tweets of his that they thought were inappropriate. And it just became this thing that you want to play gotcha with these folks, whereas we wouldn't do that in our own lives, or at least outside of my day job, I wouldn't try to do it to people in their own lives. So it's sticky because I get it. You want to share your pictures. You want to share, you know, I get what Wade says too. Maybe you have a private account, or maybe you don't put this picture up. It shows a lack of wrestling IQ, but I also want to live my life, man. I also want to have, you know, if I go to a water park with my family, I want to be able to enjoy it without worrying about people recognizing me and trying to lynch me, you know?
No, exactly. You have a right to live your life. I mean, I just put myself in a situation that if I was a WWE wrestler and I was using that name, every tweet I'd put out, and this is just me, I'd be like, how can I make money with this? What's my end game with this? And, you know, I do like Samoa Joe's account. Like, I saw the one that you replied to when he put up the West Side Connection. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great tweet. You know, he wants to put Brock Lesnar to sleep. You know, and speaking of that match, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think they have handled this feud between the two of them perfectly, pitch perfect. And even though conventional, quote-unquote, wisdom with WWE suggests the guy that gets all the heat leading up to the match is going to lose, I'm a little bit convinced that, you know, Joe's going to come out with the victory. I just think they played this so well.
Oh, yeah. I think the way Joe is being spotlighted, because truly, I think win or lose, Joe has been put on, even on a level, you know, a bad feud or, you know, someone complaining that he does X or Y. You can't take this away from him. And this is before we even get to the match. I am sure years of watching him wrestle in Japan, across the United States, even in his quote-unquote older years as an experienced wrestler, him and Brock are going to tear the house down, and he's going to give himself a national stage to show the guy that we've seen 15 years prior.
Oh, definitely. And it's going to have so much heat towards it, because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to think that Joe might be able to beat Lesnar. He's just so believable in that role. And, you know, I was not critical, but I sort of wanted someone else to win that Fatal 5-Way match leading up to Lesnar, because I wanted to get to Joe versus Lesnar at WrestleMania. Now, that was my sort of fantasy booking. I thought Great Balls of Fire wasn't a big enough stage for it. But now I'm thinking, if he puts in such a great performance, and he's standing after that match saying to, you know, Lesnar, even if he loses, but he's standing up sort of saying, I want more, there's no reason why they can't go to this match at WrestleMania and have Joe go over then. I think this feud is good enough for two matches between them, and it can really put Joe over. I guess if you're playing it out, and I was discussing this, you know, earlier in the week, you've got Strowman, you've got Reigns, you've got Joe, you've got Lesnar. If that's the four you've got to play with for two big money matches at SummerSlam, where have you got it at the moment?
For SummerSlam, I would say, if they're hell-bent on making this a one-and-done, it would probably be, you know, if you're going to go with chalk, it's going to be Samoa Joe. And I would say Samoa Joe and the Monster Among Men, Mr. Strowman, and Roman and Brock. And who were the other two?
Yeah, no, that was the four. Another interesting matchup, isn't it? Samoa Joe versus Strowman. The thing is, do they? You know, does Joe? If Joe puts in such a great performance, does he really earn the respect of the crowd that they forced to turning babyface, or do they still want him as a heel coming out of this match against Lesnar, and then you're positioning him with a well liked babyface? Like, do they go down the path of Finn Balor versus Joe for SummerSlam? Do they, you know, reheat that from NXT? Because we've also got Heyman hinting that he wants Lesnar versus Balor, because he's mentioned in promos that this is a big-time money match. So he's sort of planting the seeds in fans' minds to look forward to this. So it's just interesting where they go with his character and what they really want to get out of this match of Lesnar. So to me, and it's these type of discussions I think we're having that a lot of fans are having, which makes me think that this is going to be a really well-watched pay-per-view, if you like, And I hope it gets. I hope it lends to more subscribers for them, because to me, this is the type of talk that back in the day would lead to a big buy rate.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things I was looking on WWE.com, and I know the digital arm doesn't know what the actual storyline writing wrestling company arm does, but we have the specter of John Cena free agent as well, and the matches he's not had with any of the people we've mentioned. Other than Brock, I stand correct. Other than Brock. So you have fresh matches that we could watch as he hops from show to show. And seeing Joe, you know, I personally, just from my wrestling fan nerddom, knowing that Cena and Joe train together starting out, I need to see that match.
That is such a great point, because that is such a full circle story that you can tell. There's a lot of stuff they can do on the network. There's a lot of stories that they can tell. You're definitely right. And they do have that history, and you can bring it full circle. So it's another big match too.
And Cena,
when you know Cam and Travis, they're big on bringing up when Cena's in a serious mode. He goes into, he almost calls it minister mode. Cam does, where he just starts spitting fire and just destroying. The biggest thing I could see in a match like that is Joe mentioning. It just popped into my head while we were talking. You know, it took me 15 years to get here, but they already knew you were the prototype.
Yeah, that's a good one, because that's the name he went with. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then that would lead to Cena talking about, okay, I might have looked like they wanted me to look, but I didn't talk the way they wanted me to talk. I didn't say the things they wanted me to say. I didn't wear what they wanted me to wear. And then, you know, go into preacher Cena mode and talk about hustle, loyalty, respect, being a day away from getting fired before he found himself. And I think those two, one, would make a great feud. And two, as Cena transitions into what Wade mentioned a few weeks ago in the end notes, the second half of his career where he could be the elder statesman that has the traditional match against the foreign men. He also could be the face that does the tag match with an ascendant wrestler like Joe. And I would love to see Samoa Joe and John Cena as tag champs at some point.
Yeah, I've always thought Cena should be tagging on house shows with an up-and-coming talent to give them that rub. And that talent gets the pinfall at the house shows, because when people go to house shows, I mean, I know they only come to Australia once a year, but when I go to see them, I'm not necessarily going to see quote unquote great action. I'm going to see the actual talent, you know, because I want to see them in real life. So Cena could easily get away tagging with an up and coming talent. So, you know, but obviously he's reining back his actual schedule. But just getting back to that feud between Joe and Cena, I mean, I could hear Joe saying, you know, it took me 15 years to get here, but that was my choice. You know, I chose to do that. And I just want you to, you know, he could say to Cena, I just want you to remember, if I was here earlier, you wouldn't have had what you had. You know, I could have taken you out in a second. I could have done it in training. I could have done it while I was here if I chose to come here. But I tell you what, I'm going to do it right now. So, you know, he could plant that. If he was there, Cena wouldn't have had what he had. So there's a lot that they could do with that. So, you know, that's another interesting feud. And is that something they're going to go to between now and WrestleMania, or is it something they're going to do at WrestleMania? I hear the talk that might go down the path of Roman Reigns versus John Cena. Maybe I think he has changed his mind on Roman Reigns and Lesnar. We're probably going to get that at SummerSlam. So do we go with Reigns versus Cena? Despite the fact the way the crowd's going to react, I definitely think they're going to be more on Cena's side. And it is a big-time match for people to look forward to.
Absolutely. I think if it is Cena Reigns, it's going to be a situation where, for once, John Cena's going to get 95% of the cheers and not worry about the Cena sucks. It's going to be, you know, let's go Cena Roman sucks. And that'll be a different dynamic for him. And if they keep it up, what's going to happen is, until they find that next corporate person they want to push, that's when Roman will get the nod and they'll say, hey, we respect you. But who's to say that? I mean, I'm saying this right now on the show, but let's say they decided to put all the wind behind the sails of Baron Corbin or Finn Balor. Are we really going to see them turn on those two guys? I don't think so. I think Corbin's already going to be booed as a heel. And I think Balor, short of him falling on his face in a promo, I don't think there's a way for them to kill his vibe with the fans.
No way. And you know what I look forward to with a feud between Cena and Roman Reigns is that I know that Cena is going to want to draw some real fire out of Reigns. Like, he's going to want him to fire up. You know, I can just imagine Cena just getting into his face and wanting to draw something out from him. And that might be a direction from McMahon, might be a direction from whoever, but he's going to, it's a feud I'm looking forward to, because I know he's going to bring something out of Reigns, and it's going to get personal, and I reckon they're going to go down the line of The Rock and Cena and try and get that from Reigns. So that's something I'm looking forward to, just for the promo battles, and see what Cena can draw out of Reigns.
I'm completely in agreement. I think on all those points, I think Cena's going to want to bring it. He's already in tweets and just in general seems to me be in the role of, if you're going to take me off this spot as the top dog, I need you to do more to do it. And, you know, so not everyone responds the way that Corbin did to The Undertaker. Some people, like Roman, might not have, and you know, we saw that on Twitter. He didn't like the way Cena butted his nose in the conversation he was having. And that's up to, you know, that's up to the individual person, just like any of us. But yeah, absolutely, Jason. I'm going to definitely thank you for that. Folks, we have run out of time. If I can borrow my Tony Schiavone, we're out of time. Next week, we'll have some more action. I want to thank you for talking with me. I want to thank Jason. I want to thank Kenny, Kylan, Darrell, Brian, and of course you, the listener, for doing all you could to participate in this fun event. I recommend everyone try to get a chance to watch the New Japan on Access show this weekend. I should be back at some point on Sunday with Monsieur San Radican talking about the first night of the show. And I hope that you guys can take a listen to that. And of course that would be available through VIP. I will give you all the fun info on how you can join right now.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the every single day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: the Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, the Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.